Good morning. Thank you for joining me on Monday's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and you know how I am on Mondays. Mondays, I don't know what I'm going to say, mainly because I've slept all weekend. I got a lot of rest. I have a lot of energy to make this an amazing show. But you know what? I can't make this show amazing by myself. I need your help. I need your support. So guess what? Wake your friends, text your friends, tweet your friends, inbox them, whatever you have to do, make that phone call, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. And we have an excellent show for you today. So let's get going. Let's get started. Let's go ahead and introduce our first guest, Mr. Stefan Boehringer. He is an entrepreneur, and something tells me he is a serial entrepreneur, because somehow entrepreneurs, we just do it over and over and over again. We find that one thing we're passionate about. But another thing about an entrepreneur is that we usually do it through trial and error. We were doing something, working somewhere, didn't quite like that, and we said, you know what? I can do it better, or I can do it different. And I think that's one of the things that our first guest has done. Good morning, Stefan. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. So I started with you, not only because you're the only gentleman on the show, because I thought we were...
That should be ladies first.
No. I'll get to them. Because I see a pattern here. I always see patterns in my show. And so I think you just being here, you're going to be able to offer some insight. You have your own web design company. But you wanted a web design company that people can trust. And that was interesting to me, because I've never heard that said about a web design company. I mean, I've heard it said about a whole host of other companies. But why a web design company that people can trust?
You know, the key to developing your business nowadays is honestly to have a good and reputable online presence. And unfortunately, our industry, the web marketing industry, has been overrun by, we can call them so-called experts. And unfortunately, because of that, lots of people have had lots of horrific experiences when it comes to web development, web marketing, search engine optimization, ads, you name it. And so the key differentiator that we really look for in our agency is just to provide a product that people can look at it and say, okay, you know, that makes sense. And what they're doing based on their track record, they really know what they're doing, and they're actually delivering. They're actually doing the right thing.
I think that's important. I built my first website in 1994. And one of the things that I've learned is that I agree with you 100%. There are a lot of unscrupulous people in the industry, not specifically in the website design. I think when you request a website, it's a website. You get what you pay for. You get the look, you get the feel. But specifically in regards to SEO or search engine optimization, or, you know, ads, because they'll take some money, you know, give me $5,000 and I'll get you to the top of Google. And then you're not at the top of Google. And their response is, well, it takes 7 to 8 years to get there. So if you pay me every month for 7 to 8 years, then eventually you'll get there. Have you seen that to be true as well?
You know, if I had a nickel every time I heard that, I'd probably have that 5,000 together by now. What never ceases to amaze me is that people are good. Most people are good people, and it really hurts to hear some of the stories that people have gone through when they're just trying to launch their own business, or they're trying to grow their own business, and they just were handed a bill of goods where we would look at it and we're like, man, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, why did that actually happen? And I myself got into this because I was one of those victims, if you want to call them that. And so it is unfortunately a situation that is really something that is perpetuated, especially in, you mentioned SEO. It's probably one of the most misunderstood products, but it's also one of the most wonderful products for anybody that is a small business who's looking to get started and who's looking to get started on the right foot. And so we really work very hard to demystify what that product is actually like and actually set very realistic expectations on helping people accomplish what it is that they ultimately set out to do.
Okay, so Stefan, can you demystify it for the people who are, because I'm gonna tell you my opinion. This is my opinion and I would love to be wrong. So correct me if I'm wrong. Again, I've been doing this for 26 years. And to a certain extent, I tell people SEO is something like Santa Claus or the Loch Ness Monster. It's true in theory. It's true to a certain extent. But after a moment of SEO or after you've optimized, then stop paying people for optimization and focus on the SEM aspect of it. But I think a lot of people just keep taking money with the idea that, okay, yeah, you need to optimize your site. You need to optimize your site as opposed to moving on. What are your thoughts?
So let me start by saying that I think we all know Google is a publicly traded company, and Google, once you spend money on ads, they have to answer to their shareholders. And so they really don't want you doing SEO.
Okay.
Having said that, I think it is true for everybody on this panel, as well as most of your listeners here, that whenever you do a Google search, people have gotten wise to the fact that nowadays that ads are paid for and that the quality companies are actually what's called the organic rankings below. Well, those organic rankings are already occupied by somebody. You cannot do a Google search today and not get results. It's just not possible. So the question is, how do you actually get there? And there's lots of people who have lots of different theories, and you can talk to 100 people and there's going to be 100 different ways that they claim you can get to the top of Google. And that's part of the problem. And so what we have done in demystifying this is actually a very simple process. We advocate that you just reverse engineer. If you want to be at the top of Google for a certain set of search phrases, start with the people who are there. Go old school. We tell everybody, look, this is an old-fashioned supply and demand analysis. And you actually look at who the suppliers are and you just reverse engineer what they're doing. And then you build a plan around that. And so you say, okay, if the folks on the first page of Google are doing XYZ and you want to beat them, well, then you got to do XYZ plus one, plus two, plus three. And that is really it. That's as simple as it actually gets. And once people have embraced that, once people really look at that and say, okay, that kind of makes sense, and you actually provide them with the plan on how to get there, then people begin to, oh, look at that. We have a little
a visitor.
Look at that. That's not little Stefan, by the way. That's Rosario who decided to say hello there. Once you actually get there, then what we tell people is like, look, your website is not a marketing tool. And this is what we get a lot of pushback on this, but your website's not a marketing tool. Your website's a sales tool. And here's the reason why. When that website is on the first page of Google, what do you want people to do? What do you want to see happen when somebody goes to your website? Chances are is you want them to buy something, contact you, download something, you name it. You're convincing that visitor to do something. Anytime you're convincing somebody to do something, you're selling. Okay, so your website is actually a sales tool. And when we start working with people to actually get them onto that first page of Google, we actually work with them very hard to have them understand that those are the two core components to be successful online. And that is, number one, reverse engineer your competition. And number two, set your website up to be a sales tool.
I think that's wonderful. And I can feel the trust, the knowledge and the information just simply in your voice and what you're saying. And I've listened to a lot of people in regards to this. And I definitely agree. I always tell people your website is nothing more than an electronic business card, you know? So don't focus on your business card being the one that's going to get you the clients. It's everything after you pass out the business card that gets you the clients. So I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is an international business and leadership change agent, author, and award-winning speaker and podcast host. I want to say good morning to Diane Helbig. Good morning, Diane. How are you?
I'm great, Sharifa. Thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. And you're an author. You have a book that's out.
I do.
Look at there.
Currently Succeed Without Selling. It's currently available in the Kindle version, or you can pre-order the paperback that'll be out in December.
Okay. It's going to be out in December?
The paperback will. Yeah. The Kindle's out now.
Okay. Diane, again, one of the reasons I wanted to bring Stefan on is in the last few months, I always see similarities. I see patterns in all of my guests. And so I thought it was interesting that Stefan does marketing, but you're a leadership change agent. So I know people come to you to discuss and learn about sales. What made you decide to focus on sales and to write a book or author a book in this genre?
Thank you for the question. Before I went into business for myself, I've always worked in small business, and I've watched small business owners struggle with selling. I've watched salespeople struggle with selling as well. But I think the thing that really pushed me was watching these small business owners doing things that weren't working, mm-hmm. and not getting the results that they wanted. So when I started my business, I wanted to be an advisor on all things business, but my heart is really in sales, mm-hmm. because my belief is that if I can help you create a strategy that you will implement, and everybody's different, everyone's got, they bring themselves to the table. If I can help you create a strategy that you will actually implement, you will be amazed at how quickly your results will change. So part of my reason for writing the book was I do a lot of training. I do a lot of speaking about sales. And I just thought, you know what? I just want to put all of it in a book. There's a chapter for sales managers. There's a chapter for direct sellers, service providers, retail. I just thought, you know what? I'm going to put it all together with scripts and forms and things in the back of the book so that, hopefully it will help some people reframe how they think about selling. And if I could say, Stefan, so one of my favorite things that you said is if you're convincing, you're selling, because I believe in the total opposite of that. I think the problem with salespeople is they think they're supposed to convince somebody that the person needs what the salesperson has to sell. And I think that's what trips people up, is they think if I'm just eloquent enough, if I just say the right things. And the truth is, you really can't sell anything to anybody. What you can do is match a solution to a problem, but first you have to know what the problem is. And that is more of a discovery sort of thing. So I flip always be closing to always be curious, because I think it helps people be more comfortable with the sales process out of the gate. Because listen, I can be curious about anybody. I can be interested in anybody. But I don't want to have to try and convince you that I've got the next best thing. So thanks for saying that, because I went, whoa, wait, okay. So, and I get what you're saying about a website. I do. It is a trigger when it shows up on Google. It is a trigger for people to come to your website. And if your website shares, enough of a message, people will do what you said. They will reach out, so that then you can have that conversation. So that's my take.
That was beautiful. I like your take. Did you want to comment, Stefan?
I'm going to go ahead and let Lynette and Tony get in as well. But yes, I will actually get back to that and share some of my thoughts and actually some data on that. I agree with Diane that there's certainly a discovery phase, but there's a little nuance to the way that people search nowadays on the internet that puts a little bit of monkey wrench into that. But we'll get to that.
We'll get there. I think the whole idea is that we don't have to convince people. I think that was the key. So right. The conversation, I know this was going to be good. It's getting interested already. Diane,
yeah.
What has been the response to your book?
Boy, it has been better than I thought it was going to be. You know, you write a book and you think, okay, well, you know, I enjoyed writing it, but who's going to want to read it? Mm-hmm. But I think the most gratifying part of it is that people are reaching out to me and saying, boy, this really resonates with how I operate anyway. It sort of gives me permission to not behave in that salesy sort of way that I don't like anyway, that's so uncomfortable that I don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really helping people own a process that is more comfortable. It's more doable. That, and I've had a lot of people tell me that they appreciate the information that's in the back of the book, like the mm-hmm. scripts, and they're starter scripts. Like, you know, you can't necessarily script everything, but I wanted to give people like a starter idea of the kinds of questions that they need to ask to really learn about people. So I'm pleasantly surprised when I say that.
No, but I love it. I think that's key, you know, because I've always been the top of sales. That's one of my things. One of the last companies that I worked for was American Express. And I was a trainer at American Express, but I wasn't hired in as a trainer. I was hired in as a reservationist, a travel reservationist, to make travel reservations for the American Express Platinum cardholders. That's what I did in a previous life. All of my background is travel. All of my background is sales. I taught sales for Cheap Tickets. I was one of the people who built CheapTickets.com, the original website back in the 90s. So I have an extensive experience in sales. But for me, it's because I love to talk. Just like now, I'm a talk show host. I love to talk to people. I'm naturally inquisitive. I want to know why you want to go somewhere, because that's important. If I know why you want to do something, then I can create a plan around what it is that you want to do. And I can, you know, it's nothing worse than sending somebody who wants to golf to a organic holistic conference or, you know, somewhere. Yeah. But you have to understand what a person is doing. But one of the things I learned early on was the magic of scripts. That's why I'm just excited that you included it and excited that you pointed it out. Because when I started at American Express, their sales goal was $150,000 per month in sales. Wow. Their top agents were selling $350,000 a month in sales. I was selling $500,000 a month in sales. And they said, Sharifa, we are going to put you in training. And I said, I don't do anything by the book. And they told me, they said, we don't care what book you do it out of. Just teach people how to do what you do. And I said, okay. And then I spent the next 4 years training American Express employees to sell. But I always started with the script. You noticed this morning before the show, I had my pre-show spiel. That's my script. It's written on my wall right here. So when I forget something, I look, and that helps me catch every point. So what are some of the keys that you mentioned or some of the things that are in your sales script?
So my belief system is that everything you do up until the meeting is prospecting and relationship building. And that what you are seeking is the meeting, not the sale. Because I think one of the things that salespeople do is they think that they want all the business, especially small business owners, and they want all the business. Well, the truth is you don't want all the business, because some of the business is bad and you don't want it. It gets in the way of you really being able to grow your business. So when you're in that conversation, what I find is the prospect will say, so tell me about your product or service, and the salesperson will. Mm-hmm. And my choice is don't. Mm-hmm. Instead, say, I would love to tell you about my product or service. May I ask you some questions first, so what I tell you is relevant to you? It will matter to you. They're going to say, sure, go ahead. And then you ask questions, not only about the situation, but there's things you need to know. You need to know, how do they decision make? And you can't ask them, are you the decision maker? Because everybody hates the question and they will lie to you, right? I look at Tony, she's lying. We all know this, right? It's like the worst question in the world. So, well, it's not the worst question. The other one is, what's your budget, right? That's the other one. So, but there are ways of asking these questions that build trust. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, so you're trying to do two things. One, you're trying to let the person see that you really want to get to know them and their situation. And two, you're trying to figure out whether you can help them and whether you want to help them. Mm-hmm. And we're allowed to do that as salespeople. because not all revenue is good revenue. So when you ask these questions, you're trying to really find out who are they and do they want to work with me? Because when people are not forthcoming with information, what they're telegraphing is either they don't trust you yet or they don't, you know, they're getting three bids, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you get to decide, do I spend time on a bid or do I say, thanks, I'm not your best resource. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are ways of, in my scripts, there are just ways of phrasing things that are more permission-based, more relationship-building, so that not only will the salesperson feel comfortable asking the question, but the prospect will feel comfortable answering it, and it will lead to further questions, like, have you ever used a service like ours before? Have you ever used a product like ours before? What was your, would you mind sharing with me what your experience is? So see, I say a lot, would you mind sharing? Would you mind telling me? Because they might. And if they do, I want to know why. Mm-hmm. And you see what I mean? So it's really being able to have a better, deeper conversation with somebody that builds a lot of trust. What they realize is, I'm not there to sell. I'm there to problem solve. Mm-hmm. And the only way I'm going to know whether I can problem solve is if we have this conversation and you know, we share information with each other. I'm just not going to, there's no point in me sharing mine till I know what your story is.
That's right. You show me yours, I'll show you mine. I think that's the key. But I mean, in listening to you again, it has the ring of truth and experience, because two lessons that I've been, that I use that have helped me to be more successful. I learned that cheap tickets early on back in the 90s. It was number one, the phrase TAL, which is they all lie. And that, because people will always tell you, I'll live by that, because you're trying to talk to somebody about budget, like you mentioned, and they'll tell you, oh, I don't have any money. But, and I always tell people now, if you believe that, you've lost. Because the same person who will tell you they don't have any money is about to spend $1,500 on the next iPhone. They're about to go buy the shoes that they want, the outfit that they want. They have the money. They just haven't decided that they want to give it to you. That's the main thing. So I live by the they all lie. The other thing I did back in cheap tickets when I taught sales is that you have to understand that the person, before they even picked up the phone, they picked up their credit card. They have it in their hand. You have to see them holding their credit card in their hand. So they've already decided that they are going to make a purchase. All you can do is talk them out of it. They'll decide, oh, no, I don't want to go with you. But they have the money and they've already decided that they can spend it. And so I always operate from that. Okay, they said they don't have any money. I don't care about that. So I always move them to where I want them to go. Okay, well, what day are you leaving? What day are you returning? Okay, is this going to be a Visa or MasterCard? It was never, are you going to buy? No, you are going to buy. I just need to know your form of payment. And so I move forward with that assumption. And I love you both already. I know we can talk for days. But one of the reasons I'm sharing these 20-year-old cheap ticket stories, because my first job out of high school was working for Trans World Airlines. Back in the days, at 18 years old, I was a reservationist for TWA, moved to customer service supervisor. So basically over the last 20 something years, all I know is travel, which takes me to our next guest, who has over 30 years in the hospitality industry, Tony Giacorusso of Giacorusso Enterprises. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining us. Did any of those names ring a bell? TWA, Cheap Tickets, American Express? Like, are any of the American Express Platinum Travel? Like, that was our card we would drop, you know, when we're talking to you guys.
I'm reluctant to tell you this, but I actually used American Express Platinum Travel to do a trip to Asia only about a little over 90 days ago. And so the current situation with everything happening, I was a little concerned about that. But yes, I'm familiar with all of those places and highly regarded companies that you've been with. That's awesome.
Thank you. So over 30 years of being in hospitality and travel, you've seen the gamut. You've seen everything change as well. I always share one of my stories about change as far as companies is being, again, a kid, 18 years old out of high school. I went to TWA. They were faxing travel reservations to their people traveling. And I said, why are you faxing? Why don't you just send these people an email? And their response to me was, this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we will always do it. And I think everybody knows where that got them. And I'm not saying it was a direct result. I'm just saying it is what it is. So you've seen a lot of changes as well in the industry. Tell us, I just got to hear like your experience and some of the things that you've seen.
Well, thank you. It's a brilliant transition because the reason why my company is still here and thriving and successful, we've hit the Inc. 5000 3 years in a row of the fastest growing private companies in America. And it's because we were able to take an old school thought and innovate it to where it actually works better, is cheaper, faster, better, all that. So historically, hotels have always had hotel people on site and they handled the group bookings and they handled negotiating rates for different events. And so I had a thought through a series of random events that, the salespeople are notoriously bad for picking up the phone. I always say if salespeople would pick up a phone at a hotel, I'd be out of business. But we have this kind of prompt, quick response and reply in order to get the guest accommodated. And so I created a remote business where I have a distributed workforce. We have 80 people that live, 80 salespeople that live all over the U.S. We have hotels in Canada, U.S., Latin America, Mexico. And I love this conversation because my business, like most businesses that I know of entrepreneurs, two things that have come up with me in this conversation. One is the reason why my business worked and exploded. And this is, I started this company because I was working with a group of people that I didn't like, love, or respect. And I thought, all right, if I can start a company, what do I want to do? And travel appeals to me because I love it. And I've always wanted to travel. I was born with wanderlust. But what I really wanted to do was work with people I loved, because I realized pretty quickly I could bag groceries with my closest friends and be happy. And so it's not about what are you doing? It's about what are you doing that is in alignment with your values? What are you doing that's adding, values to your customer, that you sell something that you feel good about? I've sold things my whole life and not always did I feel good about what I was selling. So like now being in a position to have the opportunity to do that, but what was beautiful and what I know is in common, and I'd be interested to see if your other guests have this, is our business solved a problem for a big company. So Hilton was I worked for Hilton for years, renowned hotel company. I'm sure you're familiar with them. And were really struggling with people replying to leads that they were giving to hotels. And so this money was going to their competitors. And I said, we could respond to those in our pajamas at home. And so they're like, I'm like, let's try it. And so, from that built a multi-million dollar company, and it has been amazing. And like also something that resonated is when I started this company, that I love Diane's concept of there is bad business. Because of course, when you first start a company, you're going to take everything you can and you're grateful for all of it. And then you learn pretty quickly that one person can't scale. And I think that's a lot of the reason why small businesses and entrepreneurs really don't exceed, or they fail pretty quickly, because there's a couple things that happen. When you first start a business, you have to do it all. And so to Diane's point, if you're not a good salesperson, or to Stefan's point where you can't, if you don't know how to do, website development, if you don't know how to do accounting and finance, if you don't know how to do marketing, if you don't know how to, you have to do everything. And so there are things I did well and things I didn't do well. My education certainly helped that, and my experience in my industry, but boy, was that hard. And then you get to a point where you take enough bad business and you're now broken because you don't have time to send invoices because you're busy traveling to these, I have lots of bad business I've taken, but I learned it. And, the more successful you are, the more picky you can be. And I also realized for a long time, it was, bad business for me in the beginning was about what business can I get? And now it's about, am I going to be able to be of value to you? Are we going to be able to, because if we are, then it's a win-win, and the rest is up to the universe. It gets, I'm taken care of. I'm always taken care of if I'm doing the right thing. So I have so many more thoughts about everything. And the ABC, always be closing. I love always be curious. I have always said, always be connecting, because I believe deep down in every person that connection is the most important. We want to be loved. We want to be cared about. And like the worst thing we can do to any prisoner is solitary confinement. And so we just put our entire globe in a position to shelter in place. Like everybody's like, of course there's this kind of chaos going on in our nation. And I don't want to get off on that topic. We're really more talking about the business and entrepreneurial side, but I just think it's really interesting how all of this correlates. So Thank you.
Yes, excellent point. One thing that you mentioned I want to go back to is your sales team, that you have 80 people. And normally I wouldn't ask this question, but now I have to ask, were those people working from home prior to the quarantine? This is the way you've always done it, or what made you decide to have them work at home?
This is so great. Thank you for asking that, because this is where my sales skills came to the test. So most of them, 95 probably percent of them, know never worked from home. So here I was going out to people that had working at a hotel. They were significant experienced people. We don't hire anybody with less than 3 years of experience. They had to have the right personality, because I only hire people I want to go on vacation with. So that narrows it down pretty. You've got this sliver. Now I got to, you know, and not to use the wrong terminology, I have to convince them, but I had to create a compelling enough argument or platform, whatever. I had to let them leave a hotel, high paying hotel with lots of benefits, to go work at home with something that may not work, but you know, it's going to be great. We're going to have fun along the way. So I actually was able to do that, but no, they aren't used to working at home. Now, of course, that has served us well, because we've been for the last, you know, 10 years working from home. And so that gave us, when all of this happened, we didn't have to learn how to do Zoom. We didn't have to learn to set up a home office. We, you know, hit the ground running and were immediately able to make an impact on the hotels that we support. And in a time where hotels were closing and there was no business out there, we changed and pivoted the way we sell internally, and we're actually able to book over, you know, $2 million in the first 90 days of the pandemic. So that is where we decided we've got to get this information out there. How do we help other hotel people? So I was mentioning before we started that we just launched an e-learning course. It's on my website, jackarusso.com, but it's all about how do you recover your revenue during and post-pandemic. And it's 3.5 hours of e-learning and resources. Similar, we've got lots of scripting. Diane talked about scripting. A lot, everything that you would need if you own or work at a hotel to make a financial impact at your asset as we are trying to slowly come out of this.
I think that's wonderful. And again, I wanted to discuss it because I felt like the three of you were on a certain page. We have marketing, we have sales, we have lead generation, we have travel. But I want to introduce our next guest, and you may recognize her because she was on Ask Sharifa videocast last year, and she is one of the most humorous, funny, warm women you will ever meet. I still remember her interview, but I wanted to tie her in because we talk about sales, but it's not always sales. Sometimes it's that personal connection, speaking to people. And then we forget, you know, I was talking to my friend during this whole quarantine, and we've been on the phone talking more. She says people have spoken more and gotten on the phone more during this quarantine than they have probably for the last 20, 30 years. But our next guest wants us to take us to writing those personal letters. Good morning to Lynette Smith. How are you, Lynette?
I'm just fine. Thank you, Sharifa. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great.
You are welcome. Thank you for coming back. I see a purple theme. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. What is going on with the purple?
Hey, I don't even have my art glass collection out. That's purples and lavenders. I'd normally line it up back here. I haven't had time.
So you like, see, I got into a phase probably about 2 years ago. I don't know why, but everything I wanted was purple. And I had to ask the question, I'm like, why purple? And then I Googled it for some odd reason. That was like the sign of royalty, but it's also a color that's supposed to open up your psychic development. I don't know. So maybe you'll get some psychic hits during the course of the show. But tell us about Good Ways to Write.
Well, Good Ways to Write is one of my two websites and one of my two passions in life. Good Ways to Write focuses on helping people express gratitude to others in writing, and not just a text, because that's just fleeting, it's just conversation, and not just a thank you note, although a thank you note has its place and ought to be written at certain times. But when the magnitude of your gratitude is bigger than a thank you note, to an individual, whether it's because they've made a difference in your own life or in the lives of others, a fantastic way to express that is to write a heartfelt letter of appreciation to that person. And that was something that happened to me and my husband back in 2008 at the wedding rehearsal dinner of our son. He and his bride-to-be each had written and framed a letter of appreciation to their respective parents, and they presented them there formally. They had their best man and maid of honor read those letters aloud while they stood beside their own parents, and there was not a dry eye in the house. This was it.
Great.
Wonderful framed letters, and wow. Because it was framed, well, because it was written, I could take it out and refer to it again and again. Because when you think about it, somebody says thanks in a text, it's gone. It's nice at the time, but in 10 minutes, it's gone. In a month, it's gone. If someone says thanks in a thank you note, that's really nice. But it's got it, you know, thank you note has its place for different other things. If you are really grateful to someone for something they've done or who they are, and you stick it in an email, that's nice too, as far as it goes. But imagine you're the recipient of that email, and you're reading it and you're appreciating it. It's all wonderful. But unless you remember to print it out, and then you save it. And even when printed out, it's not beautiful. It's just heartfelt, which is still on the way. But unless you print it out, you know how the email box goes. Your email slips down and down and down, might get deleted. Your computer might crash. It's gone forever. And so a letter, when you take the time to write a letter, you have something tangible that you can look at over and over again. And I'm going to tell you, that letter that our son wrote to us is something that every time I look at it and I read it, and it's in a place of honor in our home, my eyes well up, my hand goes to my heart, and I just go, oh, and I feel just as good. I mean, just as good as the first time when it was presented. So that's the lasting power. And I have one more little piece of that soapbox to say, which is the person who receives that letter, under whatever circumstance, they may have been someone who tried very hard to make a difference to people, but never received the acknowledgement that they had. And they may go to their deathbeds wondering, well, I've tried to be a good person my whole life, but did I really make a difference? And if they have a letter like this, they don't have to ask the question, and they feel fulfilled. So my mission is to get millions of people worldwide to write those letters.
Oh, that's a beautiful mission. Maybe I'll write a letter today. I don't know who I'm gonna write a letter to, but I'm gonna sit down and write it for you, for someone. So Lynette, let me ask you this. And this is one of my favorite questions that I love to ask people, is that you find someone who sees something that they're passionate about, a cause or something of that nature. But what made you decide to go from just loving letters to turning it into a business?
Well, it was actually the reverse. The loving letters thing happened in 2008, but I'm going to go way back to 1980 for a moment. I ran a word processing business for 16 years that was established in 1980, because guess what? My son was born in 1980. Mm-hmm. So I want to stay at home at least for 3 years. And it turned out that I loved it so much, I wanted to stay at home forever and do this for a living. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out that my clients that I did word processing for, I found out by an informal survey, what do you like best about working with me? What is the thing that troubles you the most? Two important questions. And I learned that the reason they kept coming back to me was because I fixed their writing while I was at it. I mm-hmm. edited it. And that was great. So I learned a valuable lesson there. And then I had a 5-year period where I was running a trade association, and I was editing the association's communications during that time, as well as running the association. So I found out I just loved that. Mm-hmm. And then when that was over with, I went, you know, I don't really like working for anybody else. I'm going to have another business. And this is when I established All My Best back in 2004. So I'm just on 16 years right now, and I love it. all my best. I changed the subtitle as the business evolves, and all my best copy editing and heartfelt publishing, which mm-hmm. kind of covers the umbrella of the good ways to write mm-hmm. aspect with the heartfelt letters. So I've got allmybest.com that relates to copy editing and proofreading, and that aspect has evolved into helping exclusively book authors, book publishers, and publishing coaches, people who are writing books. I help just with the books, and that's been a nice evolution too, because I can schedule my work easily. Here's a project, I'll turn it around in 2 weeks. Here's the next one, I'll turn it around in 2 weeks. And I don't have calls all the time saying, I've got this resume, I have to get fixed up real. Can you handle it by 5 o'clock today? And I'm just like, yeah, I want more freedom in my schedule. Mm-hmm. So by having these sequential projects, it works better. So
that's love it. I think that's wonderful. We're gonna come back to you. I wanna go over to Stefan for a minute. I have a question for you, Stefan, but I'm also gonna allow you the opportunity to share some resources, some tips, some strategies. I believe in 2020 that everything starts with the website. It used to be, maybe a website wasn't necessary. Now I'm horrified when I ask someone who tells me that they're an entrepreneur or a business owner, I say, okay, what is your website? And they say, oh, we just go to Instagram and I'm at Instagram A at my name. And I'm like, okay, how are you a business if all you have is your personal Facebook account or your Instagram account? But even if you try to get a bank loan, the bank wants to see that you have an actual business, that you have an actual website. Would you agree, disagree, Stefan?
Oh, absolutely. Maybe the year 2020 is the year of perfect hindsight for us. I don't know, but
2020, good vision.
I think everybody is pivoting and learning as we're going through all of this, but your website is definitely one of those pieces that you are being judged on as a business owner, and there are some do's and don'ts that we definitely recommend that you should and should not do on your particular website. And there's even things that Google looks for, right? Mm-hmm. It also depends really what your goals are. There are some people who just want their website to be reference driven, say, look, here's our information. They think of it as a good old school threefold brochure. And then other people really do want to go ahead and look at it as being a tool that develops your brand and drives your sales. Mm-hmm. This is where Diane is going to have some fun with this conversation, but I'm actually looking forward to this next piece of this conversation. But here's the thing. I think it's important to understand that what we're dealing with is a society that, especially from a technological standpoint, has experienced a lot in the last 20 years. A lot, right? I got into this when Alta Vista was the big search engine.
I remember Alta Vista.
Okay, who remembers Alta Vista?
I do, yes.
There you go, all of us, look at this gray hair. So anyway, the key when it comes to websites and small businesses, and for anybody that's on here that's a small business owner, especially a service-based business, you have to understand that placing your business not just online, but in the right spot online can make all the difference in the world, right? If you're a price-focused business, run ads, you'll do great. If you're a quality-focused business, if your target market are individuals that really look for quality vendors, you may not want to look at the ads too much. You actually want to look more at the search engine optimization. You want to look at maps, things of that nature. Why? Because folks who look for quality vendors, they want to see a good reputation, and people have gotten smart. They know nowadays that the quality businesses are on the first page of Google, right? Because they've been doing SEO, and the way that Google is set up is they're not just going to let anybody get up there in a matter of 3 or 6 months. You must be established to be on that first page, right? Having said that, to Diane's point, Here's the thing about the web. First of all, I agree that everything should be based on the fact that you need to engage in a conversation to understand a customer's needs better. And that is wonderful when you have that connection with the customer. In other words, you have established a phone call, you have established even an email contact, you've established things somehow, right? Here's the kicker to this when it comes to websites though, okay? When you think about yourself, when you look for a service, when you need something, if a friend of yours says, oh, go talk to this vendor over here, they really treated me well, chances are you're going to trust that judgment. You're going to say, okay, I'll go ahead and contact them. That's a good idea. Thank you for that reference. Thank you for that referral. Now, maybe that's the only person you're going to contact, or maybe you're savvy and you want to get a couple of different quotes, and so maybe you have more referrals, or maybe you're going to go online. People tend to go online when they don't have that person referring them. They tend to go online when they haven't found a solution to their need yet, okay? That's why Google is being used so much for research, because they're looking for that, right? So here's the thing. The big difference between somebody going online and driving down the street and looking at a billboard is that the person who goes online has a predisposed need. Looking for something, okay? I am looking to get my kitchen remodeled. Okay, wonderful. So I'm gonna go do some research online and I might contact a couple of kitchen remodelers, okay? If I'm not looking to do that right now, doesn't matter how many billboards I'm gonna drive past that talk about kitchen remodeling, I'm just not gonna be interested. I don't have that predisposed need. So unfortunately for a lot of small business owners, when people go online and look, they don't know you from Adam. So you have to do something to differentiate yourself. You have to actually push them over the edge with the use of your website to convince them to contact you, right? That's the sale that we speak of. In other words, you create enough of a point of difference to make them want to contact you. And then, absolutely, I completely agree 100% with everything that Diane says, is you shut up, you listen, and you take in as much as humanly possible to really get a better understanding of what that potential customer's needs are.
And I agree. I think the verbiage was the key. I think the word convince, you know what I mean? It's like, I heard, and it's like, now that Diane pointed it out, when I heard you say it again, like the convince, it's like, okay, I see it. I see the picture. But, you know, again, website design for over 26 years, usually to me, I think the word that I use for convince is that call to action. And small business owners, entrepreneurs who are just starting out, for some reason, I don't know why, because it's like marketing 101 is the call to action. And I have seen, I'm telling you with my own two little eyes, I have seen some of the most attractive, high costing websites not make a dime. And I have seen some websites that I would look at and I would go, this site is ugly. Like, it is ugly. I want to find a politer word for it, but it is what it is. But I look in the back end and it literally is a multi-million dollar website. And I'm like, how? Like, it's ugly. It doesn't have a slider. It doesn't have pretty pictures, but it has excellent use of call to action. This is who I am. This is what I do. This is how you get what I got. Diane, I would love your thoughts on that.
Well, I totally agree with you. And so when I talk about selling and not convincing, I'm really talking about the business owner or the salesperson engaging in an activity. Mm-hmm. Engaging, you know, sales is a verb, right? These people have to do something to build those relationships, to get to those meetings, to have those conversations. And there, I totally agree with everything Stefan said about the website. It's a door, right? And so, yes, it has to be compelling enough to get people to take some sort of action. And in some cases, people are going to buy right there, right? It's going to be compelling enough that they're going to buy. So when I talk about not convincing in sales, what I'm talking about is when the salesperson is engaging with people, they have to let go of this idea that they have to convince them that they have the greatest thing in the world. And I hear it all the time from people. That's why that word really resonates with me, because I can't tell you how many people say to me, okay, but Diane, how do I convince them that this is really something they need? And my response is, you don't. You don't. We gotta let it go, right? My viewpoint is, listen, when you go to a networking event, when you're about to talk to a prospect, just assume there's a good, you know, that you know nothing about them. So you don't know whether they actually need what you have to sell. They might think they do, and they might not. So, because then it takes all that sales stuff out of our head, and we are just open, we are interested. Lynette, share, please.
The point is, when you're meeting strangers and there might be prospects, be interested, as you say, be curious. I go to meetings of publishers and writers of San Diego to meet writers and publishing coaches. Yeah. And I don't go up to them and say, hey, I'm a copy editor. You know, I can do this and this. I have no idea whether they need or want me. So I always ask, always, so what is it that brings you here? Are you working on a book? And I am genuinely interested.
Yeah.
And I listen for opportunities and I wait my turn, because when they're done talking, they're going to say, so what do you do? Mm-hmm. And I've already got all this ammunition, so to speak, all this information about them that I can exactly tailor what I do to talk about meeting their needs, the top of mind marketing, the, you know, wanting to help. But that's the best matchmaking.
Yeah, right.
I think of all of us, I am, or our organization, or where we kind of fall in line in that entire process, because let's face it, the whole thing is a process, is we're at the very top end of that funnel, right? We are really the kind of that first step when somebody determines that there is a need, or there is a predisposed need, as we call it, that they then decide they're going to take that first action. And I feel that the reconnaissance, let's call it, that you need to go ahead and do in the beginning to really get a good understanding of what that customer's needs actually are, is absolutely important. And probably even more for selfish reasons, because one of the things you really get to determine at that point in time is that potential person actually somebody I want to work with?
Right.
And you can go ahead and say, oh, yes, it is, or no, it isn't. I need to share this, because Lynette, I think what you're saying is just so absolutely wonderful. And I absolutely love what you do. And I wholeheartedly believe in this. The industry average of a business working with a digital marketing company is 13 and a half months. That's an industry average. That number is about 13 and a half months because a lot of them have 12 months contracts. Mm-hmm. Our industry average is 27 and a half months. We are really, really high. And one of the things that we actually do is we don't write the letters, but we actually personally—
Lynette can do that for you.
We have personal notes that we send to our clients. And if I have any clients on this call today, then I'm gonna be getting phone calls later. But on our order form, I will actually share this with you guys because it works like a charm. On our order form, we actually ask for the client's birthday. Just a month and the day. We don't go for the year, but just a month and a day, you know? And every single year, we actually have a Google Calendar that is set up. Every single year, that customer gets a handwritten birthday card from all of us. And the entire team and whoever, whichever office they actually work with, they actually handwrite that and send it out. And I cannot tell you how many times people have said to us, wow, that is just such a nice gesture. And there's no sales. There's no other thing involved. It's just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. You know, have a great day. The day off kind of a thing. And it's
I love that. I love that. That is so interesting. Yeah. So many points. Yeah. I love that. And I love that 27 months. Oh my God, that is that is amazing. So that's the industry.
That is not me, because if it was me, we'd be under 12 months, I promise you that. But that is an amazing
Don't say that. Don't say that.
It does an amazing job.
Can I add something to what Stefan was saying?
Yes,
very quickly. Okay. So what I want small business owners to understand is what Stefan's talking about is when the prospect, when someone is out there and they have a need and they are reaching out, but the salesperson and the small business owner still have to do outreach. They can't sit by and wait for people to reach out to them, or they will be out of business very quickly. So, you know, these are two different things going on here. There's people who have a need. You want them to be able to find you. Salespeople and small business owners have to be out in the community. They have to be building relationships. They have to be taking action. And this is one of, you know, the scary things about small business owners. They think if they just set up a website and a telephone, then they just sit there.
They will come.
Oh my God.
That's like the internet philosophy. If you build it, they will come. And I'm like, that doesn't work. That doesn't happen. And another thing that has changed over time is something, I love what Lynette said about I wait my turn. I think that was key. And I think that was genius. And it was so beautiful, because in this day and age, especially with millions and trillions of business owners and entrepreneurs, they go to networking events and or they send you a friend request, you accept it. And then as soon as you accept it, like 30 seconds later, you get an inbox that says, I just wanted you to know that I sell these crystals and you have to buy them because the crystals are going to save your life. I'm like, I don't even know you. Like, make a comment, say hello, like, you know, something. And then I made a post one time and people loved it. I said, look, this is my rule. Before you jump into my inbox, I don't care what it is, I need you to have done at least 2 shares and 5 comments. Okay. That's like the criteria, 2 shares of something I've said. And then you commented on some things before you can go into my inbox. But this show is wonderful. I don't want to go over, which I usually do, especially when I'm feeling good and feeling wonderful. But at the end of every show, what I love to do and what I love my guests to do is just to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives, and really let them know what you would like for them to take away from your appearance. And because of how everything is going, we're going to go ahead and start with Tony.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I have so many questions for so many of you. You need to do this as 4 hours. And I think if I was going to tell you one thing is there is endless possibilities and many, many, something that Stefan said in the beginning, people are kind. At the core, the majority of the people are kind and willing to help, ask for help. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to be an entrepreneur and a business owner. And I did a lot of things the hard way. And when I realized how many resources were out there, especially, you know, the other 4 guests on this call, I promised you all 5 of us would take calls and try to help you. So be humble enough and brave enough to ask for help.
Absolutely. That's why I do the roundtable talk show, so people can speak and hear directly from the experts, the people who have done it and who are currently doing it. Lynette, what do you have for us?
Well, I neglected to tell you the name of the book I wrote about writing heartfelt letters. Hello. How to Write Heartfelt Letters to Treasure for Special Occasions and Occasions Made Special. It will show you how to write 157 types of letters.
I don't even know there were 157 types of letters.
Proud of, and that your recipient will love. And more information about that, of course, you can get that online at any of your favorite online retailers, or you can go to the website goodwaystowrite.com. If you happen to be in the market for a copy editor or proofreader for your book, go to the website allmybest.com, and it will direct you how to contact me, some of your most frequently asked questions, and so on. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Diane, what do you have for us?
I'm going to say, if there's anything you take away from anything I have said, I would like it to be this. Choose curiosity. Realize that whoever it is you're talking to, you don't know how they fit into your world until you've had a conversation with them and you've learned about them. And if you're approaching everyone as if they're a sale, you're going to miss resources, you're going to miss referral partners, you're going to miss colleagues, friends, business friends, you know, sounding boards, opportunities. There's all sorts of things you're going to miss. So enter all of your interactions being very curious, because then your mind will be open. You'll learn a lot. You'll make some great relationships, and you'll also see the signals of the people you need to walk away from.
I think that was, I'm going to write all that down or rewatch this show, because that was some good stuff right there. And Stefan, you brought us in. Go ahead and take us out.
I'm going to leave you guys with two things. I'm going to leave you guys with a technical comment and then a philosophical ending. The technical comment is this: if you own a website, understand that on average, 87% of the people that go to your website do not have that immediate need. So we were spending a good amount of time on calls to action today. Have a direct call to action, but remember that only targets roughly 13% of your website visitors. Think about what is called a transitional call to action. Look it up online. Find a transitional call to action to try and start targeting the other 87%. We can have an entire show on this, but I'm telling you, it absolutely works. We have doubled folks' business just by working on what are called transitional calls to actions. Mm-hmm. And then from a philosophical standpoint, I just want to share, in a world that is very divisive and rather misunderstood, as especially when it comes to technology, work with somebody where in your gut that person feels like he or she is the right person. Work with somebody who's passionate, not just about what they do, but actually somebody whom you believe is doing things for the right reason and wants to help you for the right reason and doesn't just want to cram something down your throat, but actually is, in Diane's words, curious enough to actually want to not just contribute, but also learn from you. So in all of that, choose passion, work with people that are genuinely passionate about what it is that they do and how they want to actually help you. And you'd probably be amazed of what is going to come out of that synergy.
I love that. I love ending the show on a philosophical comment, philosophical thought, because that's what we're all here to do. We're all here to help each other. And I've learned so much from each of you. That's why I love what I do. I tell people that all the time. I love what I do. I started this because I wanted to know. I wanted to be better at business. And where else could I sit down and ask the people who know the questions that I had? So I tell people a lot of this do for selfish reasons, because I learned a lot. I learned a lot from you, Stefan, a lot from you, Diane, Lynette. I enjoyed speaking with you, Tony. You gave me a lot of ideas as far as people working from home. So if you enjoy the show, please share the show. I want to thank all my guests for being here today on the Roundtable Talk Show. I also especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, everyone who shared the show, everyone who made comments. We had great comments this morning. If you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit AshSharifa.com and select Be a Guest. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye.